For Monday, May 6th. Next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes. Do I have a motion to approve?
Move to approve.
Second.
We have a motion to approve in a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Moving on to public comments. If you are here for public comment, please come forward. You have 2.5 minutes. Please state your name and address for the record. Is there anyone here for public comment? Going once, going twice, and public comment is closed. Item number 4 is review of Planning Commission recommendations. First, item 4A.
Good morning. Thank you. So we have 2 items on your agenda today. The first one I'll present, and then the second one our environmental group will present to the LID program. So this first one is a request to rezone a property on Simmons Street and Rose Lane from AB, Area-Wide Business District, and they want to go to R2, Single Family Residential. The Planning Commission recommended denial, and I'm going to touch on that a minute because I think there was some confusion. Here's the property. It is on the corner of Simmons and Rose Lane. It is across from the school. It is currently zoned AB, Area-Wide Business District. You can see those properties right along Simmons are zoned AB. And the comp plan does call for commercial. So that was one of the concerns of the Planning Commission. They don't want to rezone from commercial to residential. Here's the property up close. It is vacant. Right across on Rose Lane, you have the a car lot. Basically, they're using it for parking. Here is a street view. So if I'm going from Rose Lane down to Simmons Street on the left, there used to be a house where those footers are. They tore the house down. They put the footers up. The building permit has since expired. That's been kind of sitting there. You have the car lot, and then on the right is the property in question. And then the picture down below is, again, from Rose Lane to Simmons, and you can see that there's a residence next to it. But going back up, it's all residences all the way down Rose Lane. So a little bit of history. This property actually used to be 2 single-family residential lots. Back in almost 1970, the lot line was abandoned, and it turned commercial, and it's been commercial ever since. The request before you is to rezone it from commercial to single-family residential, and what they want to do is build 1 single-family residence. That's all they can fit, given the dimensional standards of this lot. So it cannot be subdivided, and that's what they want to do with this lot. So just a few things, and I think there was some confusion at the commission meeting also. There was some residences that got up and spoke. They were concerned about townhouses. They were concerned about multiple houses. It was never really clarified that this can only be 1 single-family house, and it was also never really clarified that what can go there under the current AB, and so I just want to point out some of those uses. AB, pretty much, as you know, allows for anything. It could be restaurants, with a special exception, it could be a car wash, gas station. You could have all these things there, right? With the rezoning request, all you can have is 1 single-family residence. So again, the Planning Commission recommended denial. I think there was some confusion, again, about what the request was, what could and could not go there. And with that, I'm happy to answer questions. And I'm not sure if the applicant's here or not.
Mr. Rambo?
I will move to recommend denial of the request.
Can I have a motion to deny? Second. We have a second. We are in discussion.
I guess the reason for that is I just think over time in general in Mount Pleasant that we've allowed too many business properties to get rezoned into residential, and this is a small property that could become a small local business that helps support the neighborhood, and I don't want to see any more business properties turn residential, so that's my basis.
Any other?
Yes, ma'am. Will you go ahead? Madam Chairman, I think with the confusion that occurred on the Planning Commission for this, a single family house next to everything else single family on Rose Lane is not a bad idea. And it's not a bad idea because from a traffic standpoint, what could happen here would be pretty bad. If you look at some of the potential businesses on this corner, near Moultrie Middle School with more traffic added. I think we're better off going with single-family residential, which it was at one time. Obviously, it's not a big place for business, as seen by the vacant lot. And I just think we would be better off having a single-family house here near the school than a commercial business that could be a serious traffic hazard for the kids coming in and out of school.
The question that I had, Ms. Reed, was why R2 and not R1?
Because of dimensional standards, it doesn't meet R1.
Okay. Ms. Hyatt, did you have a question?
That lot mark 127, what is that zone now? That had a house on it.
It did have a house on it. It's zoned AB.
It's zoned AB. Uh-huh. And everything on either side, everything fine.
You can see everything
Simmons
orange
is AB.
Is AB, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, right. I agree with Mr. Rambo, and I hate the thought of losing business opportunities anywhere in town.
Can we go back to the aerial? So, there's the business
commercial
next door, is that Brown Fox Coffee? Is that what I'm looking at?
Yeah.
Brown Fox, and that's
right.
Hermosa, and that's their parking lot. Okay.
Right. 425 is the same owner. So 420, the owner of 425 also owns this lot. 425 is an abandoned structure. We've had some interest in some different things. It's just a really tough lot to do anything with because either you have to keep the existing structure, or if you tear it down, you'd have to meet the zoning requirements and stuff. So we've had some interest in it, but as of now, there's nothing planned to go there that I know of. So, and then 440A, that's the funeral home. And then adjacent to that, you have parking associated with the funeral home.
Okay.
And then everything down Rose Lane, except for those two parcels at Simmons, are residential.
And 127, the building permit expired, so that's just going to be footers for the near future?
It's footers. They pulled a building permit. They poured the footers, and then the building permit has expired, and it has just sat there ever since, so.
And it's the same, this is not the same owner as these other. These
that's correct.
That's correct. Okay. Okay. Any further discussion? Are we ready to vote? Okay, so this is going to be for a recommendation to full council. Is that correct? All those in favor of the motion to deny, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
3-1, motion passes to recommend denial. Moving on to item B.
Do you want to sit here?
No, this is fine.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Planning Committee. We have a very brief update to the existing environmental land development program. It's actually been 1 year since it's been in effect, so we've got a quick demonstration of the performance of it. This is going to go before town council with either recommendation from you guys today, and once it gets to town council, then we'll have a public hearing at that time. So just very briefly, a little bit of background for those that are not familiar with this. We do have an environmental program that has four categories. This is not a stormwater specific program. We wanted to develop a program that actually touched on many other aspects of the environment, not just the stormwater elements. The four categories are protect, restore, and conserve the natural water resources. That's actually reduction of impervious surface, reduction of irrigation, techniques that would involve water harvesting. So that's more geared towards water resource and reuse. The next category is targeting biodiversity, that's your wildlife. The third category is improve livability, mobility of the site, aesthetics and well-being, using alternative modes of transportation. And the fourth category is trying to improve the efficiency of the building materials, use more environmentally friendly materials, repurposing existing materials, using sustainable materials. So as you can see, it does cover a wide spectrum of the environment. It's just not focused just on stormwater. Now, the program is set up to to require, mandate every non-residential development to meet 100 points, and we distributed them evenly for each category, 25 points apiece, made it very simple and very low, actually, to meet those requirements. The setup, this is the diagram that kind of shows the setup and just shows how the incentives work a little bit. The minimum is 100 points. Now, if the site, the developer, so choose to be able to get an additional 100 points, and they would be eligible for the level two. We do have a level three as kind of a placeholder for any future use, which Ms. Wright's going to discuss a little bit about that. But beyond 100 points, then you don't really have to have an even distribution of points. So that's a little bit of overview of the program itself. And now the performance of the program, because it's been in effect for a year now, we've had 17 projects that have been designed that meet the minimum 100 points. We have a total of over 3,000 points generated. Six of those 17 are actually under construction. The main takeaway is that we now have 53 acres planned that are more environmentally friendly for than they would not have been prior to this program. So that is, I think, you know, a good measurement of success of how many acres that are actually in compliance with the program. Looking at that townwide from a map, we've identified all the eligible property, the non-residential property. We have 12,000 acres in the town of Mount Pleasant that could be eligible for this program. And as you can see, the 53 acres doesn't really mount up to a whole lot right now. but we do, this is a good measuring stick for future years. So we're hoping and we feel confident that that little orange strip there of 53 acres will be will start to double and start to increase as 5-10 years from now we'll start showing the performance and the success of the program. But it is showing a positive result, and we're very enthusiastic about the way things are going with the development industry. So some of the ordinances, very quick, just some clarification on how things read internally, specifying HOA amenity centers, utilities, recreation facilities. Also clarifying that the rounding of the 0.1 acres that meets the minimum threshold is to the nearest tenants, and also being consistent with our design review board of $250,000 threshold is being eligible for the program. So nothing major is being proposed, or no major changes. And in fact, the level two incentives, these are just clarification points, you know, the reduction of the buffer. We just want to clarify that it does not include the wetland buffer, does not include the critic line buffers or the natural roadside buffers, and any buffers adjacent to residential subdivisions. We don't want to create a negative as a result of this program, so it was very important we highlighted that. Also, the second one is excluding the wetted part of the pond, but the embankment could be used as double duty with the existing buffers. And then just clarifying the 100% parking to be pervious pavers, and then 20% gravel. We just want to emphasize that because we've received a lot of questions from designers of those type things. So anyway, that is a very brief and very quick update of the program and the performance. I'm going to turn this over to Ms. Wright. She's our environmental manager. She's been kind of the lead and the point person with the program this year, and she presented us to the Green Commission, and she's going to take you through some of the techniques that we're proposing as well.
Mr. Chapman had a question.
Yes, sir.
Kevin, what are the restrictions on maintaining the gravel on the property? I'm not a big fan of gravel parking because the gravel gets into the roads and onto the sidewalks and creates a hazard for not only pedestrians but all bicycles and things. How do we maintain that on the property without it spilling over to other parts of the right-of-way?
We were concerned about that specifically too when we developed the program. So we limited to only 20% of that loose gravel, the ability, and that being located the farthest part away from the building. So there's specific criteria where that gravel could be located. We also have the design details that will provide a perimeter barrier around this rock area. So we're trying to limit the amount of migration of the rocks. And we also do, just as a cover, the program itself, we will be conducting annual inspections. Okay. So each year, along with our MS4 program, which requires annual inspections of all best management practices, this will now be part of those annual inspections. So we'll be making sure that the gravel parking space is being maintained, kept up, pervious pavers are being maintained and kept up, and all the other LIDs that were incorporated into the site plan are still there. We do get acknowledgement and deed restrictions once the site has been designed that these LIDs will be in place and retrievable and checked annually. So we were anticipating trying to address that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mitchell.
Okay, now, Ms. Wright.
I'm sorry.
Hi, my name is Julie Wright, and I'll be picking up where Kevin left off. So like you mentioned, we currently do not have anything for level 3 incentives, and that's something we're looking to add with this update. We brought this to Green Commission, and they recommended we include town recognition, like a council meeting recognition or ribbon cutting, an award or plaque to be displayed at the business for reaching 300 points and getting to that level 3 incentive. But we are looking for something a little bit more substantial. So if you do have any recommendations for a level 3 incentive, this is what we're going to move forward as of now. But and these are just some examples of awards we might be able to have them display at their business. And with our development of our new environmental logo, we could put that on there as well. But any other ideas you have would be great. So just the main part of this entire update is the techniques that we're adding to the program. So these are really the environmental design methods that they have the option to include on their property. And right now we have about 23 techniques that they can choose from. So we're adding 13 new ones. So these are the 13 new ones we're adding. I'll go over a few of these, the highlighted ones, in more detail. And just a reminder that these are not applicable to every single property. That's why they have the option to choose. So some of these you'll notice probably won't be great for every single one. But tree retention, installation of animal nesting boxes, pet waste station, pond vegetative buffer, septic maintenance, connection to sewer, relocation of overhead power lines, disconnection of impervious surfaces, watershed protection sign, interconnectivity of adjacent sites, floating wetlands, pervious pavers, and Green Commission recommended we add biofuel recycling as a technique. So that's 13 new techniques.
What is floating wetlands?
Yeah.
Sorry, which one?
Floating wetlands.
Oh, I will actually go over that as an example.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, Mr. Chapman?
On the septic maintenance, are you working with Waterworks?
Yes.
Okay, great. Mr. Rambo, your committee should encourage this as well.
you'll have a really nice update in a couple hours.
Good.
Okay, I'm going to go through a couple examples. So first is the installation of animal nesting boxes. So the intent is to improve habitat for native animal species by providing shelter, nesting area, and a safe space for young. The points are 15 for biodiversity and 5 for livability. So to get the points, they have to install a native animal box and install one per acre, and they'll have to follow species-specific guidance based on whichever they choose, and that would all be reviewed during our plan review by staff. The next one is the floating wetland. It is a suspended aquatic plants with a floating mat and a rope anchor system that they would have to install in the pond, and the benefits include sequestering carbon, reducing wave energy, reducing erosion on pond banks, and providing habitat. So to get the points, they'd have to install that floating wetland in a new or existing stormwater pond with a floating mat, native plants, and rope anchor system. The points are 10 for water resources, 5 for biodiversity, and 5 for livability. Septic tank maintenance. The intent of this technique is to encourage maintenance of septic tanks through inspections and pump outs as recommended by the EPA, DHEC, and Mount Pleasant Waterworks. Since this is a known method to maintaining a septic tank, when they are not able to be connected to sewer. We want to make sure that those are not failing. So the criteria to get these points is providing proof that the septic tank was pumped out within the last 3 to 5 years or doing it at that time, and agreeing to have their tank inspected every 2 years and pump outs every 3 to 5 years, and or complying with Mount Pleasant Water Works septic tank maintenance program, which I believe should be completed in July. Maybe you know better.
June 30th.
Okay, perfect. Even better. So they have an option there to comply with whichever they would like to. And the points there are 15 for natural water resources, 10 for biodiversity, and that's it for that one. And the last one is tree canopy retention. So right now we have tree canopy expansion as a technique, which focuses more around planting new trees. So this one would retain existing mature trees. A lot of these, this would be great for a development that isn't necessarily expanding their footprint, and we can encourage them to not knock down any mature existing trees, since they have a lot of benefits that new smaller trees do not have. So to get the points, you'd have to retain 100% of the existing protected trees as per the zoning ordinance. So the challenges of the program, not that it has been in effect for a little bit over a year now, these updates have addressed most of our update or our issues that we were having. And the last challenge that we're kind of left with is getting existing commercial developments that aren't doing some kind of redevelopment project to comply with this, because right now they would only have to comply if they were redeveloping. So that's kind of what we're looking for with the incentives, trying to get them to want to participate and increase that little sliver of acreage a little bit more. So just one more slide. Just kind of like our timeline so far, we went to Green Commission, we went to Planning Commission, now we're at committee, so next would be council, so we're just looking for a recommendation by Planning Committee.
Does anyone have any questions, Mr. Chapman?
I don't have a question. I move for approval of the recommendation to town council.
We have a motion. Do we have a second? We have a second. We're in discussion. Is there any thoughts from the... I do have one. So there is an expense involved with complying with this, mm-hmm. right? So there, I think for me, a plaque is one thing, but maybe Mr. DeMora, is there over 5 years of a tax credit over 5 years if they were to come into compliance with this, right? Is that something that is possible?
We'd have to explore it. We don't have the ability to abate taxes at the local level in South Carolina. So then we're looking at other revenue sources. Whether it's some sort of a business license fee, not a credit, but a repayment or something. We'd have to dig into that, Ms. Whitley, to see.
Okay, because I think, you know, if I'm the Whole Foods mm-hmm. Patriots Plaza, why would I expend, you know, a dollar to comply with this? This is not required, right? Mm-hmm. So what's my incentive to do so? Yes?
Yeah, if I can expand on that a little bit.
Sure.
As we mentioned, we're going to have, if this goes through, we're going to have over 40 new techniques. A good percentage of those techniques actually don't cost a whole lot. We went through an analysis of how cheap or how least expensive these site programs could be. And compared to the actual expense, the program was a very small percentage of how you could actually comply with this program and not spend a whole lot of money. For instance, adding a rain indicator to your irrigation would actually get you points. That doesn't cost anything. Participating in the Dominion Energy smart controls, that doesn't cost anything. Participating in Mount Pleasant Water Works programs that they have for their septic tanks, that doesn't cost anything. So there's a good bit to select from that doesn't have a whole lot of expense to it, and we set it up just to try to encourage people and existing commercial developments that don't necessarily want to develop their property but actually want to participate in this program to be limited on how much really financial investment it would require. So there's enough techniques in there that that really don't have to spend a whole lot of money to actually be part of this program. But yeah, we were very conscientious over how much these things cost.
And if there are things that can be done that are free, why aren't we just requiring it 100% across the board? Was there a reason to not, like, if it's free to put this irrigation mark or to participate in the Dominion Energy Program, why would we not just require it, blanket?
It's a good question. It's part of the program now. I'm not sure 100% why, you know, that wasn't part of it in the past. But the good thing about this program is bringing these sort of things to light and asking those kind of questions of why isn't this part or required or aware, providing the awareness of those type of things that that you can do and just make common sense decisions over your commercial site. So this is one of the aspects of the program is to bringing that awareness.
Thank you. Mr. Rambo, did you have a thought?
Question about requirements, requiring it, I don't know what mechanism of enforcement it would be able to have, I guess is my question. And then some of these are just, I mean, like, for these commercial properties, I mean, you better be maintaining your septic tank. I mean, it's not, I mean, not something special, but, you know, I think it's another good step in the right direction for just encouraging this type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Do we have any further thoughts, Ms. Hyatt?
I think we breezed over some part of this that mentioned restoring habitat. Is that, where is that in this?
That's actually already a technique that we have in the program right now. It's protecting natural habitat. They get points for that. So that's already one. We do have a couple techniques that kind of build off of that, like pond vegetative buffers, more habitat. But we do have one already that is existing, so it's not in this presentation because these are just new ones. But
okay, so we have protecting habitat, but then we mentioned restoring it as well. So
yes,
to me, that should really be an important thing for people to do. We should really encourage that in whatever way we can. Also, when it comes to retention ponds, where are we with, we've seen it happen where people have filled in retention ponds, and I hear talk of more discussion of that happening around town. We just allow that as long as they make up for drainage in an alternate way, engineering, because, I mean, once you have one, you kind of have a little ecosystem that's set up, and it's really sad to fill it in and lay pipes or whatever. Where are we with that? We just allow that?
We just don't allow it. There's an analysis that is done, and if it if the minimum requirements are met, like water quality requirements are met, there's no impact downstream, then the pond itself could actually reduce in volume as long as they offset that volume, which provides the water quality component of it, with a water quality device, or there's some other means of filtering the water out that they could reuse that area. So we don't really have specific volume requirements that are not impactful to downstream property when you're discharging directly into the marsh. But yeah, we take those things very seriously because there's a volume reduction and there's a flood concern.
Mm-hmm.
But if the downstream property is the marsh, then you're not really discharging or you're not impacting anyone from a flooding standpoint when you're discharging into the marsh. But I mean, I'll be happy to speak with you specifically about specific things, but we do look at this from an engineering perspective and we make sure that these sites, if they come before us and they're proposing to reduce their pond or eliminate their pond, we look at it and make sure they meet the minimum requirements that we have today and there's no impact downstream.
Okay, so we only look at it as a flooding aspect. We don't look environmentally just to...
Well, there are environmental components that that they have to meet, the Sediment Reduction Act that reduces, you know, the 80% of the sediments. It's all geared towards reducing sediment. It's not geared towards protecting wildlife because these regulations are geared towards stormwater improvement. So it has no regulations in the state to actually protect existing wildlife. So those are some of the things we can actually explore in our residential. Yes. We're developing a residential a residential LID program through the Green Commission, mm-hmm. and that could definitely be something we can explore with working with HOAs, things like that. But commercial property, you know, they're. You know, there's opportunities for them to enhance the ponds that they have or either create better looking ponds now.
So I think before we vote, I just had one more thought, which is about the enforcement mechanism, which is we have business license applications that come in every year. And you could just add a box to check, like, I have complied with the low impact development. You know, here's the three free things I can do. And just you check that you complied with that. And that'd be super easy to have them check that box, don't you think? I mean, if there's free things that can be done, then everyone should be doing them. Mr. Rambo?
But then I guess the question is, so what happens if you don't check the box?
You don't get your business license?
We're just...
I mean, you have to check all the boxes, don't you, for the business license, Mr. Moore?
Well, David can weigh in. I don't believe we can withhold a business license for that.
Okay.
Someone's ability to conduct business in the town, but... I mean, it could be other ways. It really, what you're getting at is a policy decision that remains with you as to whether to impose these requirements mm-hmm. or not. And if so, what do they look like? And how do we administer them?
But I think, you know, people don't have to follow any rules, right? There's sometimes limited penalties that mm-hmm. can be given to them at that point. So we follow the rules because we want to follow the rules.
Yeah, I would say typically with planning and zoning stuff, I mean, it would be done at the time of development because you're not going to issue a permit, you're not going to issue a CO. But once you've built to the specifications that were required when you built your development or whatever at that time, I don't know that you can then come in after the fact and say you have to add these things or else. I don't know. I guess that's a legal question.
I agree. I don't think it's an element for business license, but I do think if it's a council policy decision that you would like it to be mandatory, we incorporate it into our ordinances as such. It is a box check item for issuance of all the permits. And that's good to
go. Ms. Hyatt? You mentioned y'all were looking into these inexpensive opportunities. So is there a way y'all could just bring that back to us and then we can make decisions as to whether things should be required or requested? A little reasonable list of things as you look into it, of what people could do.
Yeah, we'll be happy to bring back the other elements that we have as part of this program. The program is set up to provide for the applicant to make selections on what they can actually be a part of the program, because each project, each site is going to be different. Some that you have larger sites that you know may not be as important to reduce the pond size, where you have smaller sites that might be very important to add more pervious pavers to reduce the pond size so they can use up more of their property. So the program itself is really set up to be kind of a menu list of selection. But we'll be happy to bring back the other techniques and we can discuss what points were added to those type of things, and then you know, we're open to, you know, y'all's suggestions on where to take it from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chapman.
I agree with Mr. Rambo about not after the fact requiring somebody to do something. The reason Whole Foods has wholesome food is because it sells. That's what brings the people there instead of what's across the street at Wendy's with fried, greasy foods. So I would suggest that this is an opportunity to give people a leg up, so to speak, at their business, that they're doing things to help the environment rather than penalizing them for not doing it. So I would agree with Mr. Rambo. I don't think we can, after the fact, force it, but there are, you know, there are business benefits of doing this and advertising that you are in fact doing things to help the environment.
All right, we have a motion to approve and a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. All right. And thank you so much. And I believe there's nothing further to come before our committee. We stand adjourned.
Good job.